Well, that's good input into my last question, which has to do with your community activities. I know about the chess organization and the house.
Yes.
Tell us about what you've been doing.
What happened is that when I retired, I knew how to move the pieces. And Lieber and I would try to play a game every once in a while. I had never learned the new notation for chess, but I had always wanted to learn how to play chess well, you know. And so after I retired, I decided I would take lessons. And I saw an advertisement on the back of Chess Life magazine from Lev Albert, Grandmaster, five-time champion of the United States, was giving lessons. So I called him up, and I asked him if he would take a student who's really a novice at the game. And he said, sure, you know, we'll do it over the telephone. So I started taking chess lessons over the telephone with this grandmaster in New York. And I was just really taken with what I was doing in order to learn to play chess. And,
excuse me, how
are you
doing?
Yeah, what you asking?
I just come from the newspaper.
Oh, great. Okay, so Edith,
say a word or two and we'll record you.
Oh, sorry about that.
I would be downstairs on the telephone with Lev, and Lev would give me a position and say, take 2 minutes now and think about this position. It would be silent. Let's see what he hears upstairs. Hello? Hello? He would be giving me back. Are you still there? Because I wouldn't respond until I had a response to give, you know. And she kept hearing this hello coming over the speakerphone, because he was using the speakerphone to do this. But I was really enthralled with the kind of planning that's involved, the visualization that's involved, the ability to use your memory and hold these things in memory. And the thing that really struck me is that it looked to me the way I used to envision multiple regression in space. That if I had variables working, how did they relate to each other, these dots on the axes, right out there in space? And I was visualizing that when I learned multiple regression. And here in chess, I was visualizing these lines of play that there would be locations, spots, the hold points out in the field there, but I couldn't move. It all had to be done mentally. Right. And then you'd make a decision. You were evaluating as you went along. You had to keep all this memory. You had a good plan there. And it was really, to me, the basis of what I knew in geometry and in statistics. I was doing so many of the same things. Mm-hmm. But it was not a new habit for me to do that kind of thing. So then I decided I would go to what they call the Fugitives here in town. There was a little chess club out in Brentwood run by a master there. And I decided I would go and sit in on that. And, well, I was taking lessons with Lennon. And then there was a young boy up here who was also going, so I used to ride back and forth, young Maynard. And I met the fellow who was at that time, the scholastic director of the after-school programs. They had these programs in school. And I had been, Lev did one thing for me. When I went up to New York, he introduced me to the then director of the Chess in the Schools program in New York City.
How do you spell his name?
Lev Albert was L-E-V, first name, A-L-B-U-R-T. Okay. And he introduced me to Alan Kaufman, who was head of the Chess in the Schools program. And the story of that program was that the president of the Regional Mobile Oil Corporation, Fan Adams, had sent out a notice to the schools in New York, the school systems in Harlem, in the deprived areas, that he would put a chess instructor in those schools at his cost. But it had to be during the school hours that the kids would really learn, that it would be continuous through the week, because he felt, there was no evidence at this time, empirical evidence, that kids who learn to play chess learn a lot of other things besides the game. A lot of things are going on. One school took them up. He never had to ask again. Now they have hundreds of schools involved, whole school districts, It's over a $5 billion a year budget supported by the biggest foundations in New York City. I saw what was going on down there. I met some of the students. I mean, these kids were going on from kids who would have been on the street selling dope were now going to Yale and Harvard and Princeton. And I said, we got to do something like that in Nashville. We got to start financing that sort of thing. And I went around, I remember giving a lecture to talk to the principals here in town at their August meeting with the head of the program, the scholastic program. We had 50 schools in one program immediately after our talk. We couldn't handle anything like that. So then I decided that the way to do this would be to bring a grandmaster over. And I had met another grandmaster from the Ukraine who was Lev Study, one of the great teachers. In fact, he was the head of the conservatory. It was in the Department of Agriculture where they actually had a master's degree program in chess instruction, just like we have for physical education or for people going to phys ed. They had that for chess teachers. And he was the head of that program. And Chernobyl had just happened, and they lived in Kiev, and his daughter was already beginning to show some signs, some potential signs of radiation damage, and he wanted out of the Ukraine. And so we invited him here to come, and I agreed to pay $20,000 a year to him to come, and we didn't have a chess center at that time. He was going to live out in Bellevue where he lived, and we would start teaching chess in the schools. He would go out, he would give demonstrations, he would start teaching the kids and the students. We would make a real impression. We had a grandmaster, one of the top players in the world was here, and I'd be able to find more support. It's going to take a lot more than $20,000 a year to do this thing. Then he was here for a year, and he was going to buy himself a house. But I had already seen in New York something that was also very impressive to me. At the turn of the century, last century, the American champion, Frank Marshall, was supported by a bunch of wealthy people in New York City. And they bought this mansion where he lived, and they set up the Marshall Chess Club. He was the grandmaster in residence, and the Marshall Chess Club would have all kinds of events, kids and grown-ups. It was the center. And I envisioned having a Marshall Chess Center here with Sam Palatnik as the grandmaster, and the major focus would be the chess in the schools program here, chess for children, we call it, in Nashville. That really didn't work out because he considered himself to be much too much, he couldn't stand dealing with anything but the biggest talent, and we just couldn't get him. So after a while he went to Memphis, where they learned that when you had to deal with Sam, you hire him to do specific things. You don't give a stipend, because then you'll do nothing. You'll only... So anyway, he's working out well up there. Sam had never bought a thing, never shopped for himself. It has one of the upper crusts, for the Russia, chess, like their Olympics, was their showcase for them, the supremacy of the Soviet system. And he had never shopped, he had never kept accounts. I mean, he was taken care of there. So he had a lot to learn about living in our society, which he has done very well. He's teaching at a predominantly black school in Jackson, chess, the first year students in college. He took on a team. There was a math teacher who had a team in the most depressed, deprived area of Memphis. Last year this occurred, and he took them over the year before that, invited Sam to come in and teach. There isn't a white kid in the bunch. They won the national championship, the national team championship, after only 1 year. And I was there when this happened down here. The thing was taken here. The championship was held here in Nashville. There were 2,500 children involved in this thing. And these five kids, black and Hispanic, pictures taken, front page of the commercial appeal in Memphis, won the national championship. We had the Bronx Bombers. We had the best private schools were there all competing with their students. And these kids won. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes to show you the kind of thing. It's not just the fact that they became very good chess players, but what it had took to become good chess players. And it was the math teacher and Sam who coached them along to this point. So that was a real accomplishment. Well, now here we have students who have, there are chess scholarships being given in many of the major universities just to get these kids to come there, especially at the University of Texas and a number of other schools. Middle Tennessee gives scholarships. It's a tremendous amount of money. It's like $96,000, let's say, a year. I mean, they give full scholarships to these kids to try to get them to come to the school there. Not because they're going to be champion chess players, but because up in New York City, the past president of the Chess Federation of the United States is one of the, he's in the brokerage business at one of the big banks. They use him to make judgments about the risks involved in various kinds of investments and in one of these big investment firms. That's his real job, you know. So there's a lot of other great power that goes along with the development of the chess power that might not have occurred without that. It might, but it might not have. So it's been my goal to see this happen here in Nashville, and it is happening. Our kids from Page tied for number one in the national championship, the individual championship last year. It did get some publicity in the newspaper here. We're finally getting a little more publicity about this. And he tied for number one. He got scholarships to go to college out of that. And we've had a number of other. What I see most of all, the Asian children really take to this. I think it's more part of their culture. That we, some of our best players are Vietnamese, Korean. We have some girls that are extremely good, but they seem to lose interest because it's so much of a boys' game. As they get out into the adolescent years, they fade away from it. There's one of the best Polgar sisters, you may know Susan Polgar's name, Judith Polgar. Judith is the leading women's player in the world, and her sister is an excellent player. They started a program specifically to target girls, and they love it. The girls get very aggressive. They're out to kill their opponents, too, like Bobby Fischer used to do. So I feel very strongly that that's a good contribution. I think there are a lot of other things that help kids focus, learn to focus a little better in the schoolwork. You can teach them piano, you can teach them drums, and you can teach them bowling. They'll all get some value out of this. But I think chess has some special things that it helps cultivate. So we do that, too. And I'm hoping to get more support than I'm getting. We have several foundations that are giving money. Community Foundation, Memorial Foundation. So, this building. I gave them that building. We put sand in there to begin with, and that didn't work out. And so I donated that building. That was a tremendous investment. Anybody who owns property,
that's a very nice piece of property.
Yes. I paid $225,000 for that. When I donated it 5 years later, it was $490,000. And it's gone up at least 20% since then. That building is now worth $700,000.
Spectacular.
Yeah, this is great. And did you know graduate students from Vanderbilt lived in that building?
John Bransford lived in that building.
Okay, there you go.
Jeff Price lived in that building.
Okay, that's right. You know that.
When the two of them were bachelors, they lived together in that building.
Yeah. So you remember that, right?
Yeah. I think I spent a night or two in that building.
Did you really? Oh, gosh. Well, we did some conversion after we took it over. Have you been in since we've taken it over? You know, because what we did is we restored the old central staircase. As you would come in the front door of that building, some of those old big four squares had winding stairs. And so we broke out the wall that had been there, separating the downstairs room of the little apartment that was downstairs, and then there was the upstairs place where the graduate students were in that upstairs place. And so we restored that, repolished all the old oak, and all that whole house was built, I guess, from Sears Roebuck. Those days, people built up homes, 1917, by ordering the wood from out of the Sears Roebuck catalog. So we've restored that nicely, and it's probably the most, the warmest, it's the nicest chess center in the United States right now. So Nobody has a building like that.
If I went over there this afternoon, would it be open?
No.
How's that work?
This is, it's open on Monday nights, Wednesday nights, generally Friday nights, and then Saturdays and Sundays. Saturdays, just about anything goes on. It's open from about 10 to 4 or 5.
People just start to play games?
Yeah, on Saturday. And on Sunday, it's primarily children. That's, we have a big children groups. Now we have to have 2-3 instructors every Sunday to handle the number of children who come. And it is impressive to watch. Every time I bring an educator, I brought Phil and Dickie over, Phil and Scott, and, to the championship when it was held here. And when you walk into a room of kindergarten-age children, you know, 200 of them sitting there, kindergarten, first, and second grade, you can hear a pin drop. They're all sitting there focusing on chessboard. They've never seen anything like that. They could, you know, and they're the Barker group, you know, where you watch everything and make your behavior is the thing. You watch every motion, everything, trying to make inferences from just studying what people are doing. You know, no talking, just watch what people are doing. They couldn't believe it. No teacher can believe it when they come into a room. Several of them